You've said that philosophically you don't really agree with the notion of dismissing a coach in the middle of a year.
Well, I think that this early, I think it's insane. I mean, John has heard me rant about this. This is a pet peeve of mine for decades. I think we're too impatient. I think owners are too impatient with GMs. I think GMs are too impatient with coaches. I don't know how you get a chance to show what you can do with a team in 20 games. I really don't. I think 30, 35 maybe. I also think if you really had doubts about this coach, you make the firing in the offseason so he's got a shot at other jobs. You get a shot at the full roster of available people. It doesn't make sense now. And now you see, and Ken Hitchcock, dear friend of mine, good for him, it's an interim solution. They've even announced that it's an interim solution.
Yep.
So I just look at it and I'm like, okay, so how could this be good for anyone involved? And people say the coaches get paid well. Yeah, they do, but it's still humiliating to get fired.
Sure it is.
If you're an average person, you get fired, you know who knows? Your friends and family know. That's it. You're a GM, you get fired, it's on the ticker. Everyone in Canada knows in about 10 minutes. It's embarrassing. You got to sell your house. You got to move. So, no, I'm not happy about the last few days.
But hold on. Just to be the devil's advocate, because I like being the devil's advocate. You did fire a coach midseason.
Who?
Ronnie. Didn't you fire Ron?
Yes.
So that was midseason, wasn't it?
Well, first off.
And that was 18-wheeler day. That was 18-wheeler
day. First off, if you're going to challenge me on this stuff, get your facts right. I never fired a coach I hired. I didn't say I didn't fire a coach midseason. I fired two coaches midseason, Mike Keenan and Ron Wilson.
I was involved in the Mike
Keenan. Both of them, I had absolutely no choice.
Right.
In Mike's case, he was begging for it. And in Ronnie's case, 19,000 people at the ACC chanted, fire Wilson, and I wasn't putting him back in there again. So, yes, continue.
No, but you have fired coaches because there's going to be the guy.
I'm talking about the first 20 games of the season.
I understand. It's
a pet peeve of mine. And I'm not saying it's – I talked to Peter Chiarelli today. You can still hear the anguish in his voice. Like, this was hard for him. He likes Todd McClellan. He knows it's a collective failure. But I get it. It's a pet peeve of mine. I don't have to explain everything.
Let me get to this. The perception as a general rule that I think I have and a lot of people have is that many times, if not most of the time, when a coach is dismissed, especially, Brian, during the course of the regular season, it is the general manager looking over his shoulder and say, well, maybe if I don't do this, maybe it's me.
No question. But my rule was, and my loyalty here probably cost me dearly.
Mm-hmm.
My rule was, I'm not going to hold this coach's feet to the fire until I give him a team that, in my opinion, unbiased opinion, is good enough to win. Until I give him that team, I can't demand that he win. And so I brought Mark Crawford in Vancouver. He did an amazing job for me. Team kept getting better. We were all happy. Everyone's happy. Fine. Then the team gets sold. I get hoofed. Everything goes horribly wrong. But to me, there is some of that, looking over your own shoulder.
Yeah.
But that's never going to change in pro sports because most guys are going to fire a coach if it buys them any time at all, not me. My view was to take us both out in the field, give us both a cigarette and a blindfold and shoot us both.
And
I've had that conversation with an owner. An owner said to me, I want you to fire your coach now. It was after a game we lost in overtime. He said, you fire the coach now. And I said, fire us both, and walked out. And I called the coach. I said, let's see if our passes work tomorrow when we go to work. Like, and to get into the garage.
And I assume they did.
They did.
But you touched on something there, is that people plenty of times don't understand that sometimes the decision isn't the general manager's. Sometimes the decision has been made for him.
Yep.
A lot of times.
And I think when that happens, it really is time for the GM to step aside anyway. If the owner's telling you to do certain things, it's time to move on anyway. He's not listening to you. It's time to do something else. Problem is, there's only 31 of these jobs, soon to be 32. Problem is, they pay pretty well.
Yeah.
Problem is, there's not a lot of vacancies at any given time.
No.
So if you have the courage to say to the guy, well, fire us both, you're probably going to be out of work for a while.
Of the firings, Edmonton, St. Louis, L.A., Is that it so far this year?
Chicago.
Chicago, right. I mean, there's a commonality there in that none of the teams are playing well. that's why coaches get fired.
God, you're really good at this.
Thank you. But is there any one of those that is truly disappointing? I mean, really, surprisingly, shockingly, I can't believe they haven't played better.
Well,
St. Louis, maybe.
But that's why I'm mad at. I'm mad at the players more than the GMs involved. That you come out and stink the joint out and the coach gets canned. But St. Louis, I don't know. They all underachieved. All four of those teams underachieved. There's no one. Like, if I was in court arguing this case, I can't indict any four of these GMs and win the case that this was an unjust firing. It's a pet peeve of mine. I think it's wrong. I've never done it. I wouldn't do it. But I can't win this
case. You can understand why they would do it.
And talk to Peter Schrelling today, and he's like, gave the guy 3+ years. You know, the anguish was evident. It's no fun. You become friends with these guys. Even if it's you hire a coach that you never worked with before, like when I hired Paul Holmgren in Hartford, the sum total of time we spent together was the first time I met him, we had a hell of a fight in a summer league, and then I'd see him when we played. And then I'd bump into him here and there. He wasn't a buddy. He wasn't a friend. I hired him in Hartford. But now you go to dinner on the road. Mm-hmm. He comes over to the house with his kids. You have a cookout. All of a sudden, you're tight. And then at some point, you got to can him. Now, yeah. I got... Things didn't work for me in Hartford before they didn't work for Paul in Hartford. But that's part of the problem is you become close. You're traveling with him. You're enduring losses together. You go to the draft with him. You're asking him his thoughts on things. It's a very strong bond that you have to sever.
Are you, as a GM, are you closer to the coach than anybody else in the organization?
Yes. Well, assistant GM probably. Depends.
Yeah.
Some teams have two assistant GMs. I always had Dave Nonis.
Yeah, you were closer to Noni than you were anybody else.
Dave Nonis, and then when I was in Anaheim, Bob Murray. I said this on the air. I want to say it again. I think assistant GMs have a role on every Stanley Cup team when you win. But I think Bob Murray probably had a bigger role on the Anaheim Cup team than any other GM. He really pushed for 3 or 4 key players that I didn't know that well. Sean Thornton, Travis Mullen. Francois Beauchemin, like he really pushed hard for guys that were key parts of the Cup, and I'm glad I got a chance to get that plug in. So I'd say your assistant GM sometimes, and then your coach.
Assistant GMs don't get fired very often, unless the GM himself gets fired.
They end up being part. The problem is that you end up being painted with the same brush.
Yeah, as the GM.
As the GM, there's lots of times that happens. Like, case in point, the guy that's been brought here to Toronto, Lawrence Gilman, ended up. Basically being out of a job for more than 2 years because he was painted with the Mike Gillis brush in Vancouver. And Lawrence took a lot of brunt, a lot of stuff because he, you know, Mike took a lot of stuff.
Sure.
And that, fair or unfair?
Is it?
Yeah, that's true.
Is it unfair?
I don't think people are driving listening right now when you realize the average GM salary is probably $300,000. The average assistant GM's $300,000. Average GM probably 1.5. I don't think there's a lot of tears being shed in anyone's car as they drive. Is it fair? It's the business we're in.
Mm.
But yeah, someone can say, for example, that I put too much faith in defense. Like everyone knows I love defensemen. That's how I build my teams. And I've heard the criticism that, you know, you would be willing to pass on a good forward to take a defenseman. Case in point. I would have taken Noah Hanifin over Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
No question about it. I'll admit it to everyone. In fact, people think I was a defenseman because I'm big and dumb looking. And they look at my stats, and my stats are terrible. And they think, well, he must have been a defenseman. No, I was just a terrible forward. But you get painted with that same brush. Someone would say, well, Dave Nonis, he likes defensemen too much. Same as Berkey. So, I don't know. I'm just crabby about this.
Do you think... there's a monkey-see-monkey-do mentality here. Again, last year, no GMs fired during the course of the season.
No coaches.
Or coaches. This year, 4 already, all in the last couple, 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Do you think the first firing, which was LA's,
yes,
kind of gives general managers the thought process that maybe I should do this too?
It only... that I would buy into that theory if it were the Bachelorette theory. Okay, if I want to get this guy who's out of work, I gotta move now. I gotta fire my.
Those of us that thought that Quenneville might initiate that kind of thought process. Adam
Vigneault was the guy that I was thinking
of. The best example of recent years was when Boston fired Claude Julien.
Yeah.
I mean, and there were four or five teams.
Montreal responded quickly.
Well, because there were four other teams saying, should we take a look at Julien and then make the phone call?
Minnesota with Boudreau, too. So,
yeah.
So that's what I call a bachelorette or some kind of contest where it's a beauty contest. If you want Alain Vigneault, you better be the first guy to fire him. Now, that's not the case. He's still looking for work, and no one's jumped on Quenneville. So, no, I don't think that was it. I think these are guys just looking at the way they're playing and saying, I can't see us coming out of this. I'm making a change.
Let me throw something at you. Is that we're all, I mean, you may not be, but there's a lot of people in the hockey world happy that coaches are finally getting paid commensurately, properly. Started with Mike getting his deal. Then Joel got a big deal. Claude got his money in Montreal. Could that be backfiring on them now, too? Where people are saying, well, hold on. I don't want to. I mean, I'm happy to pay, if Joel's making six, I'm happy to pay $3 million this year, but I'm not going to pay a $6 million coach in the future. And they may have overpriced themselves just by their previous contracts.
Yeah, that's a very real possibility. I had a GM ask me about that today, how it works on setup. So a guy, let's say you want to hire Joel Quenneville right now. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're the Toledo Mudhens. You want to hire Joel Quenneville. You got to call the league and say, we'd like permission to talk. He's still technically in the pay of the Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. You get permission. You say, well, we think you're worth $4 million a year. And so you say the Blackhawks will pay him $4 million a year. That comes off the $6 million you owe him, but we're not paying six. And the league would make sure that that happened. You couldn't pay him a dollar.
Right.
You'd have to pay a commensurate salary, but four is still within the range. The league would say that's okay, my guess is.
Do you think 50% is fair? In that, if you're sitting with Gallagher,
if you've never paid that before, yes,
yeah.
If you're Columbus and you haven't ever paid a coach more than three,
right?
Or if you're, you know, Carolina,
you can make that argument.
You can make that argument. I found that the league is almost always pretty reasonable. Like I really have not, you know, so, but they're not going to let you work for a dollar. They're not going to make you pay $6 million.
Are you surprised?
Unless you're stupid enough to. You could go in and say,
a big market that says we think the coach is worth $6 million.
Yeah, yeah.
I know some GMs were upset when coaches' salaries went up because it all happened in a week, right?
Yep.
And a lot of people were upset about that. My view on it is it's not that they're finally getting paid because I think they were paid well to begin with. They're getting a much more representative salary, and it used to be that the GM made more than the coaches made, and that's not true right now on a lot of teams. The coach makes more than the GM. And that's fine with me, too. Mark Crawford made more when I hired him in Vancouver than I did. And in baseball, the field manager makes way more than the general manager makes. So I don't get hung up in that. This is what's fair. This is what we can afford to pay. We're going to pay it.
Here's what interests me, Berkey. If you're in the situation of being a general manager and you have to dismiss your coach during the course of the season, are the attributes and expectations that you would have about that, the guy you're going to hire, whoever it is, different than if you're going through the process in the summertime? And I say this because, look, you can theorize anything in the course of the summertime. I can make changes here and do this there, nobody's got any wins and nobody's got any losses. In the middle of a season, a little bit of panic. Your expectations are higher.
Or a lot of panic, Bob.
Or a lot of panic. And I'm wondering whether you're looking for something, you tend to look for something different if you're hiring a guy 20 games in rather than in July.
In both the cases where I made a change, I had the guy I wanted waiting in the wings.
You knew who you were going to go get.
Randy Carlyle. So I didn't make any compromises on what I wanted. And I would have gone longer if I had to wait for both of them. I would have hung in there longer with the incumbent coach to wait for either of those two.
But what were the attributes that those guys had that you thought made them not just good coaches, but good to replace the guy you had with?
Okay, so I like hard coaches. I like coaches who hard tough practices, hard games, and then I want a positive teaching environment the rest of the time. So during the games, I know millennials like to have everything explained to them. I don't care if the coach explains it to them or says, do it that way because I told you to, idiot, or you're not going to play anymore. You can explain it the next day. You can show them film. You can get the whiteboard out. But during the 90 minutes or 2.5 hours of the game or 90 minutes of practice. I want hard practices. I want hard commands. I want to be tough on people. I want to get it as close to a combat environment as you can, where people do what they're told right away. And again, I apologize to all veterans when we use military analogies, but that's what I want. So I want a coach who the next day will take the kid in and said, hey, I barked at you last night. Let me show you what I was talking about. And we'll look at some film. I want a positive teaching environment the rest of the time, but I don't want any question about it. It's a place of sweat. When you come to practice or you come to the game, it's a place of sweat. It's not a place for fun. It's not a place to pal around. It's a place to work hard, sweat, and get 2 points. And the fun in this game comes when you get 2 points. Nothing else is fun.
You know, it's interesting because Hitch was on with us yesterday, and we talked about some of his strategies and philosophies. It sounds like it fits perfectly.
Hitch would work great for me.
Yeah.
Both of you are Civil War heroes.
Both Civil War buffs, too.
Yeah.
Hitch is a little harder on players during the game than I like.
Or than he admits.
Yeah.
So he doesn't think he's that hard.
No, I know.
Oh, yeah. But we probably argue about that because I think there's a way you can be hard on players and never be abusive. And so, for example, I never let my coach bring up money. He could never say to a player, the money we pay you and this is all we get.
Oh.
That's not fair criticism for a player. What we pay him is between the team and the player. The coach has nothing to do with it. So you can't bring up money. You can't bring up family. You can't say, I had your brother and he was a bum. None of that. We have off-limit topics. But you can be hard about how we're playing. Say, God damn it, get your head in the game. Stay inside the dots. Get back there. It's your guy. You can be hard without being abusive.
God damn it, was as hard as you would.
Well, we're on.
Not necessarily.
On TV.
Okay, so listen, I want to change the topic completely. Why don't you like the slow clap in Carolina?
Because I don't.
Why not? People are having fun.
I don't need a reason.
Yeah, you do.
No, I don't.
Yeah, well, if you do in television.
No, I don't like it.
People are having fun.
I like the clap.
I mean, people are in there standing up. It's like people would stand up for fights. See, they're having fun.
Yeah, how many of them?
All 12,000?
Yeah.
12,000.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the crowd?
I wish you'd count on my crowds in Hartford. That ain't 12,000 people.
Speaking of Hartford, you got rid of Brass Bonanza.
The players asked me to.
I mean, it was.
Okay, by the
when
way.
When you went to Hartford, was a tradition. You're going to say, get my facts straight.
Get your facts straight. I like the slow clap. I don't like the surge.
Oh.
The clap's fine.
Okay. So you like the slow clap.
Yep, I like the Icelandic clap.
You don't like the next part, the canoe.
The peewee stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I don't like that.
Why? How come?
Because I don't.
this is a part of our business. You have to actually give
a
reason.
No, I actually don't have to.
Yeah, you do.
No, I'm a guest on this show.
No.
I don't like it. And it's as simple as that. I don't like it. I don't think it's professional. I don't think it belongs in our league. So if the people in Carolina like it, great. As I said to Donnie Waddell, he said it's a player-driven thing. He said, I'm not going to interfere. The fans like it. I said, great. I'm not saying the league should abolish it. I'm not saying no one should enjoy it. I'm saying I don't like it. And I don't care if you agree or understand with that viewpoint.
Oh, I don't. It doesn't matter about viewpoints. Viewpoints are great. I love opinions.
There you go. So I don't like it.
I just want people to have fun. Enjoy the game.
I just said that. Enjoy it. Have fun. Yeah, watch it. Yeah. I'm not going to watch it. I turn the TV off when they win. I switch to another game. I think it's absurdly amateurish, peewee garbage stuff. They like it? Terrific. Stay and watch it. Clap. Have another beer and stay and watch them swim or canoe or whatever they're going to do next. I'm not watching.
Oh, boy.
What is intriguing? Can I get back to the coaches for a second? Unless you have another ridiculous topic to address.
Well, I will, but I'm going to save it.
All right. So we now have some experienced and successful coaches not coaching. You don't always get that. Sometimes you get a run of guys who don't have much track record, not much success, lost a lot of games, probably not going to get another job. You got at least four guys here that we've talked about already that you would think at some point in time, teams are going to look at. Like, Stevens has had some success. I don't think he's finished coaching, do you?
No, I don't think any of these guys are.
I think Todd might have a job before the end of the season.
McClellan.
It's a deep bench right now.
It is.
And Alain Vigneault's on that. And, sure.
And Joel,
you obviously. To, you go to the end of the year, Joel. You go to the end of the year, Todd Nelson, Dallas Eakins. Like, then you're going to have the best and the brightest from the American League and the NCAA on that list. And that's why I say the time to hire a coach is the off season. That's when you've got the most options.
Do you,
well, right, you could hire one right now. You got a pretty good group.
And by the way, if you're a coach right now and you're struggling, that's not back of mind. That's very much.
Oh, yeah.
This is like a when they spot a shark off the beach, right? The great white shark swimming off the beach on Cape Cod. Guess what? One's out of the water. Everyone's nervous. And that's what this is. You got some pretty good candidates out there swimming. I remember when Glenn Sather got fired in Edmonton, I was in my first year in Vancouver. And I said right away, I said to Dave Nonis, I could be in deep doo-doo here. I'd been there less than 12 months.
If they can fire that guy.
He's off the beach swimming around. Guess what? We were all nervous.
Hey, would you, as a manager, would you build a succession plan? Would you have a list of guys always at your...
Yeah.
And say, okay, listen, if I fire my guy, here's my top three?
Yeah. Well, ideally, what we always tried to do here, the plan was that Dallas Eakins would be the coach here if we made a coaching change.
So your AHL guy.
He wasn't quite ready when we made the change. We didn't want to do it midseason.
Yeah.
But he did a marvelous job here, and that would be the plan, is your American League guy could step in.
You extended his contract with the Marlies, didn't you, at that time?
With Dallas?
Yeah.
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 Just to keep him in the organization. Yep. You didn't think he was quite ready yet, but you thought, well, we'll give him an extra couple of years on his deal down there.
And he did a great job.
Yeah.
But that is, you know, like, the timing doesn't always work for that. Like, that may not work for the Marlies. I'm sure Kyle's plan is he'd like Sheldon to come in after Babs, but Babs ain't going anywhere, not as far as I could tell.
Nope.
They may lose him. And they may, and there's...
Well, and actually, your buddy Bob Murray, Murph, is... extended Dallas's contract one more time.
Yeah.
But Dallas has the luxury of actually coaching in San Diego, California. It's a pretty good lifestyle if you're not in the National Hockey League.
But so to answer your question, yeah, you've got a succession plan also for assistant GMs. If your assistant GM gets interviewed for a GM job and leaves, you've got your roster of guys you want to bring in to replace them.
I want to get to one other thing, and we talked with Merrick a bit about this earlier, and the three of us have not talked about it. It turns out that right now the most surprising story in the National Hockey League is the team just down the QEW, the Buffalo Sabres, who have the same number of points as the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yep.
And I said to Merrick earlier, I said, I know of no one who saw this coming. You know, I think people in Buffalo are hopeful that they're going to get better. They're pretty young. They've got, you know, they got Eichel. They've got a few pieces. What is, how are they being this good? And do you think it's sustainable?
It's too early to say if it's sustainable for me.
Yeah.
You know, winning 7 in a row or 8 in a row out of your first 30 games, that's not long-term success. They appear to be riding really timely goaltending and hot goaltending. That generally doesn't sustain itself over a lengthy period of time. So I would say too small a sample size. The reason I'm not willing to say it's clearly a fluke and they're going to fade is they've got too many different players pulling on the rope right now. It's not just Jack Eichel, who's a marvelous player.
Yeah.
Skinner's having a career year. Go right through the roster.
Ristolainen's
playing great.
Really well.
So they got lots of people pulling on the rope, and that's why you can't write it off as a flash in the pan. You know, it's not just Jack Eichel. It's Pominville, and it's Skinner, and it seems to be a different guy every night that does something good, Okposo or someone else, right?
Yeah.
So, it's a great story. I like the Pegulas. I don't like some of the new owners, but I like them, and I'm glad to see them having some success.
So the three hottest teams in hockey right now are the New York Rangers, who have gone 8-1-1. Sabres have gone 8-2, and the Detroit Red Wings have gone 8-2. Three teams that I think
we all had them, right? We all picked
I was going to say three teams that I didn't have any of those three teams in the playoffs.
No, and again,
I had Buffalo improving, but still not getting to the playoffs.
And again, the team of the team that seems to me to have the most veteran pieces in place and combined with kids that could likely sustain that is the New York Rangers.
You think?
Yeah.
Sounds like this David Quinn's a pretty good coach too.
He's a really good coach. He's a good guy, but I think they've got some veterans there and. I see them as maybe being able to ride it out. The others, we have to wait and see. But it's good for hockey when teams that have not had success and were not anticipated to have success knock off some of the big boys. It's a good story for Buffalo to be where they are right now.
Oh, I don't question that at all. I think it's a terrific story, and especially since you're still in the middle of the football season and their football team is crummy as hell. This, you know, and they've gone through a long, long drought, and any optimism has got to be positive for them. And this, for me at least, I don't know about you guys, but this is surprising that they are where they are. Well, I did not see this coming at all.
Bob, anyone who tells you they saw this coming is lying.
Yeah.
Not all three of them.
I think you're right.
The changes that Jason Botterill has made, though, when you talk about what managers have done, Connor Sheary coming from Pittsburgh, getting Pominville back out of Minnesota, and signing Carter Hutton, who was supposed to be the best backup goaltender in hockey the last 2 years, and everybody thought, well, he'll get a little bit more money and be a good backup for a good team. For him to come in and be the number one goaltender is truly a great story.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Berkey, always lovely to see you. Thanks so much for coming.
Can I ask one more question?
Of course you can, if he'll stay.
Well, you know, he's the historian here. Like November 22nd, 1963, where were you?
I was homesick from school.
It was a tragic day, but it's one of those ones that we're of the same age.
I lived in Chicago.
And where we were and what we remember.
It came on the TV. I was watching The Rifleman. Western is homesick from school. So was my brother. I think we had measles. And it came on that President Kennedy's been shot. And I ran into the living room and told my mom, an Irish Catholic. My mom started crying.
Yeah.
First president that I really associated with. I mean, I was alive for Eisenhower, but I was too young. I was a young kid. And I was home for lunch from grade school. And the news came on, I think, just as I was getting ready to go out the door, shortly after 1 o'clock. And my recollection is my mom let me stay home for the afternoon.
Yeah.
And watched.
We got sent home from school.
I don't know what I was watching, what was on, but CBS was on.
Yeah.
Well, it was Walter Cronkite.
We went to Catholic school, the Irish Catholic president, first one ever.
First ever.
My mom wept like a family member had died, and we did have. They canceled school the next day, or we had a mass for the president or something. Yeah. They did a big deal out of it.
Yeah. Okay, I'm done now.
Thanks. That's a cheerful topic, John. Thanks.
Well,
but an historic topic.
Hey.
50.
Like that show we were watching before.
55 years ago.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Shocking. Thanks, Berkey. Good to see you as always. We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Brian Burke of the NHL and Sportsnet. More to come. Wayne Scanlon will join us. LeBreton Flats. Are they going to build a rink? Doesn't look like it. We'll talk about it when primetime continues.